Before we jump into today's episode, I want to know, are you feeling constantly tired, stressed, or stuck in survival mode, even though you're doing all the right things? My best-selling book, Optimal You, Supercharge Your Energy, Strengthen Your Immunity, was written for people just like you. It's a guide for those of us living in the modern chaotic world who want to optimize your health, prevent burnout, and take back control of your energy and well-being. I'm so proud to share that Optimal You is an Amazon number one bestseller and has been shortlisted at the Business Book Awards in the wellness and well-being category, recognized for its science-backed, practical, and truly holistic approach to long-term health. Inside the book, I share the exact framework I use in clinic, from the 8 core pillars of health to the 4 essential lifestyle S's. Whether you're struggling with niggling symptoms, feeling low in energy, getting sick more often, struggling with autoimmunity, or you simply want to feel like yourself again, this book will meet you where you are. Available now in hardback, paperback, and on Kindle, just search Optimal You by Nicole Good on Amazon or visit optimalyoubook.com for all the links. Because your health shouldn't be on hold and the optimal version of you is waiting.
Welcome to the Good Health Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Good, a certified functional medicine practitioner, registered nutritionist, and author. In this podcast, we delve into the world of energy and immune health and wellness with positivity, from optimal health and energy to stress and burnout, right through to immune conditions such as thyroid and autoimmune disease. We deep dive into functional medicine, nutritional medicine, and lifestyle medicine, as well as the personal stories of our amazing guests, from Olympians to famous faces and guest experts from all different parts of the health and wellness world. It's time to stop letting your health hold you back and become the optimal version of you. Don't forget to come and join the conversation on Instagram at good_health, that's G-O-O-D-E, or visit the website nicolegoodhealth.com to find out more.
Okay, so Dr. Andrew, welcome to the Good Health Podcast. It's great to have you here today. I would really love to start, actually, you've had a fascinating journey from traditional medicine to that functional medicine, the anti-aging medicine. And this is something that I'm always fascinated by, is doctors who do cross, use both, or move over from one to the other. So what led you down the path? What led you to sort of using functional medicine? And we're talking today about that sort of menopause care. So how's that functional medicine sort of impacted your work, and why has it become sort of that central focus for you?
So the way it worked out for me was, I think almost 18 years ago now, that I myself was in a physical and a health condition that was not good. I was just started feeling very tired. I couldn't sleep. And if I couldn't sleep and I kept waking up in the middle of the night, and suddenly it just happened very suddenly, and I just didn't know what was causing it and why I was tired so much that I had to lay on bed almost every couple of hours to get enough energy. That was kind of very concerning to me. Since I'm an MD, I did all the testing myself, the blood tests and urine tests and things like that, just a mainstream doctor's recommended test is what I did. And then not just me, myself, I actually saw some mainstream doctors as well to see if there was something I was missing and I wasn't able to figure this out. And then all I was told was that everything was fine. There was nothing wrong with you. If I was fine, then why is it that I feel so crappy?
Yeah.
So I kept researching and I kept looking for answers. And lo and behold, just around that time that I was trying to figure it out, my career even, because overall, I wasn't very satisfied with what I was doing, because the patients were continuously having the problems and they were just being managed. So I just thought that I wasn't really doing much to change people's lives for better. And I thought, maybe it's not for me. Maybe I should change my career. I was even at that point when I was like, okay, maybe I should get into real estate.
Okay, and total change.
And do something completely different. But then I still had the problem that I had with myself. So I had to continuously research. And I got invited. Luckily, I got invited to a seminar in Beverly Hills, California, about bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. At that time, I had no idea that there was something like bioidentical hormones. It is not what they teach you in the medical schools.
No. And this is something I find fascinating when we have doctors on the podcast, because obviously I come at it from a nutrition point of view. I did neuroscience at university as well, and nutrition, and then went into functional medicine. And I always find it interesting when you're hearing from doctors who have then gone into functional medicine, the things that they focus, because we talk a lot as functional medicine practitioners, we talk a lot about the difference between functional medicine and traditional medicine, and where we feel that traditional medicine, I hear all the time people sort of saying, oh, everybody's just said everything was fine, and all of this. So we can talk about it. But I think it's very powerful when you hear a doctor who has worked on that side be able to talk about that very honestly and sort of say, actually, I felt like I was just managing symptoms and I felt like I was going to leave the medical profession. And it really makes people realize that actually it is really important to look for other solutions. There isn't necessarily, that's not to say we don't need traditional medicine. It's just a case of there's not one path for everybody and you've got to find the right path for you. And that may be looking outside of the conventional treatments.
Yeah, I mean, now that you talk about the nutrition, I can tell you that in medical school, they teach you about 2 hours of nutrition.
Yeah, I think in the UK, they say it's about 8 hours and that over the 5 years. It's insane, isn't it? And a lot of it is that protocol-based teaching as approach to nutrition as well. Like you're saying, the diabetes diet, or, it's not that personalized nutrition piece.
Oh, no, not at all. It's just one size fits all. And whether you are 200 pounds or 100 pounds or whatever your lifestyle is, doesn't matter. You just put on the same exact diet, one person to the next. So that's no nutrition. And so that's a whole subject I can cover from another podcast about nutrition. And I'm sure you know so much more. But the nutrition is a foundation. I mean, what I found from my experiments with myself and with my patients, and whom I absolutely tell them, look, I've never done this before because I'm an MD. I haven't been taught this, but I'm learning on my own and I could do this for you. And they say, yeah, doctor, please, whatever you can do to help us, because they are not being helped for chronic diseases. The chronic diseases are the biggest problem. Like you said, the autoimmune diseases, chronic illnesses, but thyroid is really part of the endocrine system. So if you have a problem with thyroid, it can also affect your female hormones. So you have to be able to balance the thyroid, even the adrenals and the ovaries. I mean, that's how I got into it. I saw this room full of doctors that are excited about what they're doing because they were doing the bioidentical hormones. And I'm like, this is not what I've seen in the past going to the medical conferences. I never saw doctors so excited. So I got really into it and I got curious and I talked to many people. I talked to the speaker and I said, what are you doing for yourself? He said, I am taking 6 different hormones. And that was Dr. Terry Hertog. He's a very well-known second generation endocrinologist from Belgium. So then it's been many years, almost 2 decades that I've been doing this. Very happy to share this information with you because this is going to get more people aware that they can have a better quality of life, no matter where they are in their age group, whether late 20s, early 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, even 80s.
And how does your approach differ, to supporting women that are at the different life stages? Is it a very different picture when you're looking at somebody in their 20s, 30s compared to somebody in the sort of 40s, 50s, or, beyond that?
Right. That's a good question because, look, the endocrine system is so many hormones. All of us have all the hormones. That's the first thing we have to know. Because in the beginning, when I was doing this, women would like, when I started talking about testosterone for women, and they were like, what? Do I have testosterone?
Yeah.
And I would say, yes. Both sexes, both men and women have the same identical hormones. There's no difference except the ratios, the amounts of each of the hormones and how they get metabolized to what different downstream metabolite is just, that's the difference. To give you an example, in men, if the testosterone needed is at, let's say, 100 units, women would probably need between 2 to 10, but they would need it. If they don't have it, they don't feel like themselves.
Yeah, and it's just different ratios. It's interesting, isn't it? You've mentioned the bioidentical hormone replacement, which we're going to talk about because it's something that we haven't covered on the podcast before. And I'm really interested to talk. I don't prescribe HRT, obviously, coming from the background I come from. I'm really interested to learn from you about this. But I think just before we kind of dig into that a little bit more, for any of the listeners who are new to the space, or maybe they're just sort of approaching the perimenopause stage and they don't really know that much about it, can you just explain to people what's actually happening in that sort of perimenopause, menopause stage when we reach this point of needing support, and how might they feel? What sort of symptoms might they be looking at?
the first thing that we have to understand is as women, we have a certain number of eggs. You're born with a certain number of eggs at birth. It's called ovarian reserve.
There's the fact that you were carried in your grandmother because your mother had all her eggs when she was born from your grandma. So you were there in your grandma. It's like that sort of three generational thing, which I just think is a really fascinating way of thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think like that because that's where it starts. I mean, you have your ovarian reserve, so you have a certain number of eggs. And then once you start having your periods, your menarche, then each cycle, there's a certain number of eggs that are getting matured. That reserve is being used up. So every month you are losing, I don't know, maybe 100 to 1,000 eggs that are being matured. And out of those, only one gets matured and gets released from the ovaries. So over a long period of time, you're losing that ovarian reserve. And then at some point, you completely lost it. There is no more eggs. Like when I'm using the bioidentical hormones, when people sometimes can have periods again because of the withdrawal bleeding, but then they say, hey, does that mean I can have a baby now? So I have to make it clear, no, you can't have babies because you don't have the eggs.
Yeah.
Because the eggs are the ones which is the source of the female hormones. So when you're losing your eggs, you are declining female hormones until you reach the point where there is not enough. I mean, it's never zero. But if you do the lab testing, it'll tell you have less than 15, for example, nanograms per liter. So you have some, but there's not enough to create the physiological effects that are needed at a certain level.
Yeah. And what about symptoms? So if people are sort of heading into that, you know, perimenopause phase, or what sort of symptoms should people be looking out for?
So when you're younger, there is different types of symptoms that you could have. Like if you're in your 20s, for example, you can have PCOS.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's cysts in the ovaries that are kind of creating a problem, bottleneck, more testosterone is being created. So you get into acne, irritability, just not being yourself, moody. All these things can happen as a result of PCOS or painful periods because of too many eggs being mature and too many cysts that are too big. So they cause pain. So you can have those different things. You can have irregular menstruation if your hormones are not fully balanced and they're not really being cyclical. Of course, there's many factors that affect the ovarian cycle when you are younger. There is many factors, including the emotional state, including your lifestyle, including stress, including exercise, physical exercise. That's why a lot of athletes don't have periods because they're so physically enduring that they just block it out. There's no ovulation occurring. Sometimes they go into what's called amenorrhea, which means no periods for a while. There is many things that happen when you're younger. But as you're kind of coming along and you're getting older, the first hormone that goes down is progesterone, which is the one that comes when you have your ovulation happen. So if you have your ovulation happening, you would have enough progesterone. There is a point where you're not ovulating every month. So there's some months that you just bleed, but you don't ovulate. You can get progesterone deficiency symptoms, which are having problem with sleep, not able to sleep all night, superficial sleep. And then during the day, you're kind of irritable, anxiety, mood swings, things like that. You can even have acne. These things can happen.
These things are very sort of what we would call like non-specific symptoms. So they're the sort of things that people might put down to not having had a good, you know, I'm irritable because I've not had a good night's sleep, or I'm tired because I'm busy at work. You know, they're the sorts of things that, and I think we're really good at doing this as women as well, that the sort of things that we can sort of brush off and push aside as being normal, and we shouldn't accept them as normal. But I think as women, we're very good at doing so.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the thinking about health is such now in the Western society is that unless you have something so severe, you don't go to see the doctor, for example. Like, unless you're having a heart attack, you're not going to go see the doctor, right? So basically what that means is that you have ignored all the signs and symptoms of getting to the point of getting a heart attack for a long period of time because nothing happens overnight. Nobody's going to die of stroke overnight.
Yeah, I talk about it a lot with autoimmune disease because obviously those antibodies with autoimmune disease show up a long time before people reach disease state where they would go to the doctor, tick all the boxes and get a diagnosis. you know, those antibodies are there for a long time. And usually there's a long period of time of some of these, again, non-specific sort of fatigue type symptoms or brain fog or, you know, these sorts of things that people put down to, you know, just being stressed or tired or whatever they might do. You know, in functional medicine, like we do the full patient history, you find actually that there's a lot of things that do crop up that people have even, I always find it fascinating when you're going through with the patient and you go through their health history and you're like, oh, well, so this experience happened just before these symptoms started. And all of a sudden they'll be like, oh, yes, actually. It did. And you know, it's like a light bulb going off for them and they start to see the connections. And it's like, oh, yes, actually, that, you know, that did, that started, that was just before, you know, and it's like when we start to talk about maybe this could have been a trigger. And it's like, yeah, maybe that was, maybe I've had that since then.
Absolutely. I mean, this is what I'm trying to say. The whole health, it's not even health. It's actually medical, the whole medical industry, the whole medical model is only that when you get to the point of being able to be diagnosed is when you have a disease. But that's not the truth.
Yeah, it's sick care, not health care. It's not actually keeping you in health. It's helping you once you're sick.
That's why I say, you look, you know, when a patient's come in and I say, look, are you interested in getting a label for your disease or are you trying to get better so you can live the best quality of your life?
Yeah.
Because what we are doing, what you and I are doing is called preventive. We are preventing the pathology to appear and be like a big emergency care. My job is to keep my patients out of the hospital. Literally, it's no brainer for anybody to realize that this kind of medicine is not just to prevent your heart attacks, but actually to give you the best quality of life that you can live right now in present time.
Absolutely agree. Let's talk a little bit about these bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. You're known for your use of it. But what exactly is it? Lots of people will have heard of HRT. I think most women probably have heard of HRT, but a lot of them may not have heard of BHRT, the bioidentical hormones. So what exactly is it and how does it differ from the HRT?
Well, there's a big difference between the HRT, as we all know, for the last 50, 60 years, women were being prescribed Premarin and Provera as a menopause management. Again, it's a management. It's not to make your health as it should be. People were being given Premarin and Provera, like one size fits all. That's one thing. The other thing is that the Premarin is a short form for pregnant mare's urine.
Okay.
So that hormone was not a female hormone. It was a horse's hormone that was being given to women. It's not the human hormone entirely. So there is equine hormones, right? It's an equine hormone. There's five different types of estrogen in a horse. In a woman, there's only three types of estrogen. So only one of them is common between the horse and a woman. So you can imagine getting a hormone from a horse is not what a woman needs.
It's unbelievable, isn't it, really? When you I think a lot of women don't know this stuff. And then when you sort of lay it out for them, I'm sure there's plenty, as I am now listening to you, sat there thinking, why would I ever want that?
It's like, exactly. And so that's the reaction. Yeah, I mean, who would want that? That's ridiculous, right? Because we're not trying to be a horse. Anyways, and then the other one was Provera, which was called progesterone, right? Which is very important hormone for women. And it was a synthetic version of progesterone. So it was not the real hormone that a woman would need. So even if the hormones are very delicate structures, so they can be very minute differences between different types of hormones. All the hormones that are ovarian and adrenal hormones, they come from cholesterol and they are changed with each of the metabolic in the metabolic pathway. Each step changes the form of the structure of the hormone. And each hormone acts very differently because of that structure that's a little bit changed because of the metabolic pathway. So you can imagine even little changes in the structure of the hormone can make a big difference in how that molecule works in the body. For example, the DHEA. The DHEA is an adrenal hormone, but it can convert itself into testosterone. And the testosterone can convert into estrogen. So what I'm trying to say is that if you change the structure a little bit, so if the progesterone converts into medroxyprogesterone, it will have a different effect in the body. the bioidentical hormones are exact duplicate and exact same structure as we have in the human body. So there's no side or adverse effects as long as you use it in the right physiological doses.
And are these synthetic things or are they?
So if you use the word synthetic, means something made in the lab.
Yeah.
Of course, it's made in the lab. But if you ask about, are they natural to the body? They are absolutely natural to the body. But no, I mean, how would you extract somebody's hormones, right?
So this is a question that I've had asked before. I've had women who have sort of said to me, but how's it identical? Because it's made in a lab. Struggle. I think it's one of the misconceptions. Misconceptions actually was something that I did want to talk to you about. But I think it is one of those misconceptions around these things is actually just because it's been made in the lab. Yes, technically synthetic, but that doesn't mean that it's not biologically identical to the structure of the hormone that we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even your vitamins that you take every day, they are made in the lab.
Yeah.
You know, everything, all the foods that you make, they're processed in the lab. Everything is processed in the lab. So you have yams. For example, there's yams. So you can't expect a human progesterone to be present in a plant. That hormone cannot be present in a plant. But the structure could be very close and that could be changed and could be developed in the lab to be identical to the humans. And that's what the bioidentical hormone was born, that concept, because we can call them natural, because they're not natural. They're made in the lab, but they are bioidentical. This is why the word was coined in recent history.
So let's just, because we've kind of touched on it already now, but about misconceptions, because I think there is a lot of, particularly when we, not necessarily around hormones, but particularly when we start talking about HRT, I think there is an awful lot of confusion for women. I think there's a lot of fear around talking about HRT. I get so many women come into clinic and they're like, my doctor's told me I need to take HRT and I really don't want to take it. And actually, if you say to them why, and I'm not saying that they all should, if somebody says, I really don't want to, I always ask the question why, because I like to get their view and their opinion. And most of the time, the answer will be, I don't really know. I've just heard things that make me think maybe I shouldn't take it. But they don't really know what that is. They don't really know what they've heard. They just know that there's a lot of fear, a lot of confusion around HRT. And I think there is a lot around that. So what are the most common misconceptions? We've touched on the one around the bioidentical hormones, but what are the most sort of common kind of misconceptions that you hear from patients around this sort of hormone therapy?
No, this is very common. It's the fear mongers that have created the fear in public, especially women, to keep them off of these lines. So they can, I guess the hormone that was being used before for 50 years, half a century, and called Premarin, and the other one was Provera. So that the study that was done using those synthetic, those are 100% synthetic. And there was a study called WHI trial, was done in, I think, 2004, and they found that these hormones that were being used were kind of creating the adverse effects, you know, like breast cancer or stroke or blood clots, liver problem, things like that. So they had to stop the study prematurely. But look, they had used these hormones for 50 years on women, and then they come out with a trial because the patent is out. So they have to come out with a trial and then put the fear in people's minds about the adverse effects. And then they would put this under the same umbrella, like, oh, these are all hormones. But these are not all hormones. So the hormones that were used in the trial was Premarin and Provera. It was not the bioidentical hormones. Can you imagine your own body having adverse effects to what you already have in your body? Young women have a lot of estrogen and progesterone. It doesn't harm them. It doesn't cause breast cancer as commonly as you would when you get older. After the age of 50, you have higher incidence of breast cancer, whether you are taking hormones or not. And if you look at it logically, a younger woman who's 20 years old has a raging hormones, but she doesn't get breast cancer as often. And then a person who doesn't have hormones after age 50 is at a higher risk of breast cancer. What does that tell you? Logically speaking, the hormones cannot cause cancer, because when you don't have them, you get cancer. When you do have them, you don't get cancer as often.
And what about, because you've touched on trials there, and I think it is really important, particularly with trials and scientific papers and things like that, it's really important that people actually research where these papers have come from, who they're funded by, you know, all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And read them critically as well, which is something that we're taught to do as when we're studying. And obviously the general public are not trained to do that. Has there been trials into the bioidentical hormones?
Yes, yes. I think there have been some trials. There was a paper published where they evaluated the bioidentical hormones. And it great, no adverse effects. I think it was published in postgraduate medical journal or something. I don't remember exactly, but there is many studies. There's many, many, many studies that show you the effects of bioidentical hormones. But unfortunately, they're not being promoted in the public, in the media as much. You're right about look at who's behind the funding. That's really what it is. So you have to look at who's, you know, follow the money trail. That's really what it is.
Exactly. And because at the end of the day, you know, as well, and this is not just with bioidenticals, this is with a lot of things, a lot of, you know, we'll call them the more natural things, they don't have the funding to run the studies and to run the trials, because the drug companies are usually the people who are funding trials, and they don't want to fund these trials because they're not going to do them any good. So, you know, you do have to follow the money, look at where it is, and also consider, you know, a lot of people will say, well, why are there not more studies into bioidenticals compared to HRT? Well, there's more money in them doing things in HRT. You know, they're going to make money out of that. So that's why.
Exactly. The bioidentical hormones are compounded. That means there is a pharmacist who's going to make it personalized to you. So it's not a commercially produced medication. So there is no funding for it, because how do you do that? I mean, there is who's going to be funding that study? But I have been using it now for almost 20 years, myself personally and my patients. And I've not had one patient of stroke, heart attack, you know, clots, cancer, anything like that.
You mentioned that pharmacists make these bioidentical hormones for the person, sort of to the person. Can you just sort of explain for people who don't understand sort of how that works, what that process is like?
The bioidentical hormones are not commercially prepared by a big pharmaceutical company. The way it works is that the compounding pharmacists have to get extra training to know how to compound medications. They can get the raw materials. So the raw materials, the compounding pharmacist gets those, and then they compound it. That means they make it to the right dosage that are being prescribed for you by the physician. So it's like one-on-one, very personalized. There's like, it's not a generic. It's not the one size fits all. It's exactly what your body needs. And even then, you still have to titrate the dose. That means you have to kind of find out what is the right dose for you. But that option is only available because it is compounded. So the compounded medications are very key to our health. So we have to protect the compounding pharmacist, because that's the way to get your own personalized healthcare.
So how does the functional medicine aspect of what you do, how does that kind of shift you away from, I know you've mentioned this sort of managing care that comes with the conventional medicine. So how does functional medicine shift you away from that?
Yeah, I mean, in functional medicine, you're not managing anything, right? Functional medicine is like you are a functional medicine practitioner. So you know that we are looking at the root cause. We are going down, digging deeper into your various different systems. The analogy that I use is like the body is like a biological machine, but there are still all various different systems, just like a car. You know, you have a car, we got an exhaust, you got the transmission, you got the engine, you got the water, you got the gas. All these things are part of the car. If one of them goes off, then you can't really get the car working correctly. Does that make sense? So the same thing with functional medicine. You just dig deeper into each of the systems. The hormones is one system. It's not everything. It's one system. Then you have nutritional biochemistry. Nutrition is another system. You have to make sure your nutrition is in, which is feeding all the different systems. There is a word for it called homeostasis, where the body is trying to keep itself into correct balance.
Yeah.
So functional medicine, I added to my practice probably in the last 10 to 12 years before I was doing other things. But then I realized I was already doing functional medicine, that I wasn't calling it functional medicine. And I learned a little bit more things about that. So then I added more things to the care of the whole body. I love it. I love functional medicine because it really gets to the deep down and the reasons and the whys and why are you having a trouble and the root causes of it. And what I notice is that when you treat a patient functionally, the patient stays well. They don't go up and down. They're not unstable.
Yeah. What about the role of nutrition and lifestyle and, you know, emotional well-being as well in that sort of hormonal balance? How big a part does that play in the care plans that you would work on with patients in your clinic?
Another analogy that I use is ecology. There is an ecological system. If you look at the planet as an overall thing that we are on this planet, and there's all these different people here. There's all the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, and we are all living together. So it's an ecological. We're kind of helping each other, and that's how it works. So the life is the same way. You are living as a part of a bigger whole. So if you are in harmony with the bigger whole, then the life you will be obviously much more fulfilling. So that's what it is. So it's really your rest of the parts of your life that you have to participate in to really have a good, fulfilling life. So lifestyle, when you say lifestyle, it is composed of those little factors. I mean, life, what is lifestyle? You know, it's just if you are engaged in activities that are survival activities for not only yourself, but others, your family, your friends, your neighbors, I think that is more positive. It gives you more positive energy.
Yeah.
Because you are fulfilling your goals, you know, your purpose of life.
Yeah. In my book, I have the 8 health pillars, which are the, you know, immune health and brain health and the things we expect. And then I have the 4, what I call the 4 lifestyle S's, and they are sleep, strength, stress, and social. And under the social pillar, it is all of that. It's connection, it's purpose, it's having goals, it's feeling like being part of a community, all of these things that actually really enrich our lives. And it's a huge part of living a healthy life and living well for longer. Like you said, everything is interconnected. You can't just look at one thing. It's about pulling everything together and building on that. And I think that's really important.
Yeah. I mean, man is most happy when he's happy. Like, I'm happy doing this podcast because I'm trying to make people aware and helping them understand more about their bodies so that they can live a better quality of life. So people are usually engaged in those activities, which bring them, you know, joy. It's a joyful thing to do. So stress is usually, you know, stress is important. I mean, there's so many factors in stress. There's so many factors. We actually work with a life coach. We have a life coach on our team that coaches the people on their lifestyles. Like, what do they do? You know, people, if they are in a relationship that is toxic, that's not really helping them and contradictory to theirs, you know, goals and purposes, you know. So all of these little things that we have to get into, dive deep into, is definitely part of creating health, because health is not isolated from other factors in life. I mean, sleep, of course you should sleep, you know, that's no brainer. You know, people need to sleep, you know, at least 8 hours a night.
And stress as well, because we have the cortisol steel. So if we're making too much cortisol, we need those nutrients to make hormones. And we can see sometimes that people are making far too much cortisol, which again is a hormone of the whole. We can see hormonal imbalances because people are stressed and are favoring producing stress hormones. So sometimes the sex hormones are impacted by that.
Oh, absolutely. So the way I explain to my patient, there is 3 parts to man. One is the spiritual being. And then you have your mind, which is a big, huge subject. And the third is the body. So body is what we were discussing now. So the body is like a machine that we use to live our lives. When you're talking about cortisol steel, you're talking about the effect of mind on the body. The way I practice is that, okay, so we are going to fix the body. We test your saliva. We do your adrenal testing, check your cortisol, all this stuff. And we balance it out, right? But if there is a mental stress that continues on, in other words, you have to do the mind-body. You have to do all of it in order to really help someone. So we do all of it. I have a person that is, like I said, life coach, but she really helps with the whole, like, what is stressful? What is causing the stress? I mean, most of the time what happens in my practice, in my experience, is that when I start treating a patient and I talk about various different things and I balance the various different hormones, the person comes up to the point where they feel, okay, I can handle my life. Because of the body, they're so overwhelmed, they can't sleep or they don't have energy or they have pains to joints and headaches, whatever it is, right? One time I had a patient, a nutritionist actually, she came to me and she asked me to do her hormones. I think her biggest problem was that she had a marriage problem because she didn't want, I think her libido was so low that it was causing stress on her relationship with her husband. So we treated her and of course her libido went up and she was back in good relationship with her husband. But as a side effect, so she said, well, I was trying to move my practice from one little location to this other location for 10 years. I think about it, I couldn't do it. Just now, I moved from that location and I'm in a new location.
It's amazing how things have a knock-on effect, isn't it? And we're clearer, you know, even with sort of stuck on sort of decision-making and taking action and, you know, things like that. It's all harder if we're not feeling on top form, if we're feeling tired, if we've got brain fog, if we're stressed, you know, all those things. Everything is so much harder.
Exactly. I mean, there is many hormones that play a role in motivation. And you can see how the body and the mind is so closely connected that the body can influence the mind and the mind can influence the body. It goes both ways to a certain extent, obviously. If somebody has a really bad scene, then it needs to be resolved as itself. But I'm saying there is, like you said, the positive effects on people's lives. This happens every day that I see in my life. So I'm very excited and I'm happy with what I do. And it's very fulfilling as an MD because I do have the advantage, a bit of an advantage, because I have done the medical schooling. So I know the basics of body much better and I can order all tests I want. So we do all sorts of testing for patients, functional medicine, imaging, anything that we need, we do that. So it's a whole picture. That's how it is.
Yeah. And that is so important. And you in clinic, could you offer, I think I'm right in saying you offer everything from sort of IV therapies to fitness coaching, life coaching, sort of you really do offer everything. How do you go about building a plan for somebody? How do you go about deciding whether they need fitness work or they need life coaching or they need IV therapies or they need nutrition counseling? How do you go about deciding which services people should have?
Oh, now you want the secrets out. No. It's very, like you said, it's personalized. So we have to, we take a very detailed history. It's a timeline. We want to put all the factors that have happened in their lives in a sequence as they occurred. So then we have a full understanding. I mean, I go into very depth. Like we have a questionnaire that's like about 20 pages long.
Yeah, I always get the same. I always get people going, oh, how many of these forms have I got to fill out? How many pages are there? But it is so important, isn't it?
Yeah, very important because you want to get the whole picture.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have the whole picture, you might be missing something that is a key component of their health. So you want to go dig deeper into exactly, and then you kind of put it into different categories. Like what are the symptoms that could be related to one system, one biological system? So you kind of separate out the reasons of why they could be having those symptoms that they're complaining about. And then from there, we actually order personalized labs. We don't order the same labs for everyone. We want to make sure that they are personalized. So that means we can get the correct information. I mean, doing the labs is not just for the heck of doing the labs. You're using the labs to create the program that is correct for that person. And then once they get started on the program, like we do about 6 months of program. Initial program is 6 months. And we see the person once a month. And then what I tell them is you have a homework that you have to do for next 1 month. So they do the homework for 1 month and then they come back and they give me the update on what has occurred. I always tell my patient, look, I have a lot of patients, but I don't have patience because I want to see the change fast. So they come every month and then little by little, they get better. Some people just blow out right out of the gate. They're like amazed immediately within the first month. But most people would take between 4 to 6 months to completely handle their situation. So they are at a point where they could be now stable because you have fixed all the underlying reasons of why they're feeling diseased.
That's, I think, you work in a very similar way to how I work. And I actually had this conversation with somebody the other day. They said, well, can we get some testing done first? And I was like, well, we normally do the process of doing the forms and doing the timeline, and then we'll recommend testing. If there's a test you particularly want, then, you know, okay, we'll get it done. But we usually go down that process because I think if you can combine that history with the then deciding which testing to do and combine the results, you know, the what they've put on their forms, their health history with the results of the testing, that's such a powerful tool to be able to decide how to move forward. And like you said, it's different in terms, I mean, obviously I work with a lot of autoimmune disease. So with those, it's, you know, some people, like you said, there's quick wins that you might see in a month, but generally the people I work with are not going to fully recover in a month's time. You know, it's a longer process. I'm like you, I work on a 6-month one-on-one program as a minimum. So that's how I do it. I think it's really important that people do understand with functional medicine that they are an active participant in it. It's not medicine where we're going to say, here's a pill, take it for 4 weeks and come back and let me know how you feel. You know, yes, there's supplements and things like that, but that's not how it's going to work. It's going to be that you are an active participant in your journey and you've got to take part in that. You've got to reach out. You've got to do the steps, put the lifestyle things in place, do the nutrition, you know, all of these things. That's how you get the results. And it's going to take time as well. I think it's important for people to understand that.
Oh, 100%. That this is a screening process. We take patients only who are serious about getting well. This is not a walk in the park. I tell my patients, this is not a walk in the park. You're going to have to do the things. I can only show you the way, but you have to walk. And so my patients are like cream of the crop. They're amazing people, amazing, amazing. They stick with me through thick and thin, and they're amazing. I just love my patients.
Yeah.
Because they are the reasons why I get fulfillment. Like I feel as a doctor who is really doing her job. Every time a patient comes and tells me a win, and I say, look, you made my day.
Yeah, I feel the same. I love that. Somebody just sends you one of those messages or they come into clinic, say something, and you just think, yeah, that's why I do all the hard work. That's why I do what I do, is to get somebody to say that little snippet of a sentence is the reason. With these bioidentical sort of hormone replacement, how early, you know, we've sort of talked about that, you know, perimenopause, menopause stage. How early can people start working on this, or can women start working on this? Is this something that women should be leaving until they are sort of 50s and, you know, around menopause stage? Or is this something where we should be really looking at hormones and working on this at all stages of our, you know, of women's health, of the different life cycles?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, like I said, endocrine system is one system in the body. It absolutely needs to be looked at. You may or may not need hormones if you're 15 years old, but if you are 25 years old, you know, it's a good idea. I recently had a single patient that would come in and they said, you know, I want to get pregnant, but I'm not able to get pregnant. And so can you do functional medicine and balance my body out? And I was like, yeah, I'm not a fertility specialist, but I can do functional medicine. I can balance your body out. And lo and behold, I had a single 8 patients that were not able to conceive, and they all got pregnant, and they are 2 or 3 of them I've already delivered. And I'm so happy because I was the reason. I was like, okay, we did it. So it's not like a particular time that you're going to do hormones. No, it's just if you are in dis-ease with your body, you're not comfortable in your skin, then you're going to go to a specialist who understands all of it. I'm lucky because I can address the body from all different directions.
Just to kind of round things off and sort of finish up, what is your hope for the future of women's health hormone care, both in functional medicine and in the sort of the wider healthcare system? What would you hope to see in the future around the way that we work with women's hormones and help treat women's hormones?
No, I think the bioidentical hormone replacement therapy should become available to everyone. They should not be suppressed. That the hormones should be available to everyone in every country. So I think this is why I'm doing this podcast, because I want to make sure that people know. I've been doing it long enough to see the effects of it long-term. Like I have patients that have been being treated with me for 20 years. So when they started, they were 50 years old. Now they're 70 years old. And I've also treated patients who are in their 80s, and they're doing so well. I mean, that's the whole subject of this patient that I treated. But the point is that you can do these hormones at any age. It's better than nothing. It's better done than not done, because you can experience the magic. It's almost magical, because I won't tell you how old I am, but I am pretty old. And
We certainly don't look it.
No, not at all. The point is that you can do the hormones, you can feel well. I think we deserve to feel well, and we don't have to wait for the crisis to occur in order for us to open the eyes and do something. I think we should just prevent things from happening and actually just make yourself healthy. Even though there isn't any test to see if you are healthy, any particular one test that's going to magically tell you whether you're healthy or not, but you know whether you're healthy or not. If you don't feel at ease with your body, under your skin, in your skin, then you need to find out and do functional medicine, because that's the way to prevent and bring the body into harmony and homeostasis.
I love that. Dr. Angie, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been really interesting talking to you, and I've learned a lot as well. So I hope that everybody listening has really enjoyed the episode.
Well, I hope so too. Thank you so much for inviting me to your show.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Good Health Podcast. Do share the episode with anyone you think it may benefit, and help us to spread the word on all things health and wellness by rating, liking, or subscribing to the podcast. If you want more, you can listen to more episodes on your favorite podcast app, or sign up to my newsletter for my favorite tips, tricks, health advice, brands, recipes, and more at nicolegoodhealth.com/newsletter. Have a lovely week. Don't forget to hit subscribe, and I'll see you on the next episode of the Good Health Podcast.